Hook, sinker, and line.
Oh, yeah, you lucky devils, you. Guess what you got again? It's me, Fishing Frank. Yep, and I am joined today in the chair across from me by the blind tarpon, Robert himself. We got Captain Morris Campbell with us, and we got RJ in the control chaos booth. And we got a lot of topics, a lot of fish to talk about, a lot of weird stuff to talk about. Anyway, kind of a normal show, but hopefully better than average. And let's see. First thing off the bat, redfish. We're hearing stories of redfish schooling up, getting, and this is a good sign, actually some nice-sized schools of redfish schooling up on the east side and possibly even over on the west wall. What's up with that, Robert? I've heard of them down by Cape, or not Cape, down south of Mount Lachey, putting into big schools. Are they doing the same thing on the east side?
Yeah. I mean, I wouldn't say they're big schools, but they're definitely schooling up 50 to 150 fish. The usual school that's on Burnt Store Bar, both on the south side and the north side, are there. I've heard of a couple smaller groups of fish up on the northern part of the east side, closer to Alligator Creek. And then one guy posted a video of him fishing a school of fish. It looked like it was 300 to 500 fish, but I could not see anything that was recognizable in the background.
You can't see anything anyway, so...
I got an iPad. I hold it up 2 inches from my face.
But see, his iPad is an EYE pad.
Yeah, EYE pad.
Yeah, exactly. No, I mean, plus I've been doing it long enough. I can get a rough idea on some of these areas where people are at sometimes. But this one, there was no tell signs in the background of where he was at.
You think he meant to do it that way?
Some people are smart enough to do that way, but believe it or not, the majority of the population is not that sharp when it comes to their photographs. And then they wonder why.
Wonder why the next day when they go there, there's 40 boats?
Yeah, exactly.
Fishing's actually pretty good from what I understand. The redfish are cooperating well.
Yeah.
Now, this goes into a conversation I had. I was on the phone with the state of Florida, and we're talking about it, and he was asking me about the redfish, and I said, my best theory is a hole in the space-time continuum where the redfish leave somewhere around December, January, and don't come back till August, September. And then there's just gazillions of them, same way it's always been, but during the height of the snowbird slash tourist season, we don't see hardly any redfish. And this has been going on 4 or 5 years now.
Yeah.
That... this has been happening, and he was saying, do you think it's increased boat traffic? And I said, no, I think the right word is continuous during those times of years. Because back in the late 90s, early 2000s, if you went down the east side, both sides of every island, sometimes there'd be 3 boats on an island, a front, back, and one of the sides. But it was almost impossible to find a place to fish during the height of season. And same thing out in Gasparilla Sound, Pine Island Sound, no matter where you went, there was a lot of boats. And continuous boat traffic over, you know, literally more than a decade, I think has maybe made the redfish think, all right, well, just get a little colder, we got to go somewhere and hide. Just to get away from the propellers and the sinkers and the hooks and the lures and everything else that go along with lots and lots of boats. So while there may be a bad thing with the redfish population, it could be they're just in places where nobody's looking for half the year. Because right now the redfish are doing great.
No, I agree with you. I mean, it kind of reminds me of deer season. You see that buck in his normal pattern for weeks and weeks, and then all of a sudden deer season opens up, and that buck either goes totally nocturnal or completely beds himself down and is only out for a very brief moment, so he changes his entire habit. And we've seen that with fish over the years where they've changed their habits, where they get lazy because you got those community spots where everyone sits there and chums 500 white bait and 3 guys did it in a period of 3 hours, and we wonder why we're not catching a fish there. And you go up and look and it's all this dead white bait on them. Well, the fish are all full. They know that's the spot to be for the first 1 or 2 guys, and then they shut down. So I think when you got all that continuous pressure the way you're talking about, those fish are going to get out of those freeways and move out more into the rural area.
Yes. So part of it's a decline in the redfish population, but part of it's just a reinforced change of habits for the redfish.
Oh, absolutely.
So you're in agreement, Morris?
I am, because every year at dove season, I live next to a place where they hunt doves, lots of doves. And my yard, my 10 acres, totally fills up with doves like 2 days before the season opens. And they show up, they eat goat feed, chicken feed, and they just hang out. They're happy as little larks. And when hunting season's over, I don't see a dove.
Okay.
So if a dove is smart enough to do that, you know darn well a redfish or, you know, anything else is.
Yeah, I mean, so anyway, let's see. Redfish are hitting well. Anything they're hitting on? Anybody know anything they're hitting on? I know blue crabs should be really good bait.
Crabs are definitely number one right now, without a doubt. Yeah. But they are starting to transition over into the pinfish feed. Both live pinfish and cut pinfish are working really, really well on them. And then, of course, cut ladyfish or cut mullet would be like a third or fourth place. Frozen shrimp is right in there, right next to the pinfish right now. They're kind of both kind of equal as far
so
as second place
number
goes.
Number one is crabs. Number two is frozen shrimp or live pinfish.
Correct.
Scent's now, a plus for this.
So what's that?
Scent makes a huge difference here.
So if they're not eating live fish, cut live pinfish, cut them in half. If they're not going to eat them live, they'll probably eat them dead.
Absolutely.
Dead stick a gulp. I mean,
right.
Easy.
All right, now, if you're wondering where can you get some pinfish, well, if you don't want to go to your bait shop and get some, we are hearing stories that the pinfish populations on Boquilla is picked up quite a bit. There is some pinfish on the east side, but still pretty rare where we're hearing good reports of schools of pinfish to cast net. But Boquilla is one of the better places for the pinfish right now. RJ, our control guy, you have a thing with the septic tanks. Everybody says this is the cause and this is the reason for that, this is the cause of that, and everybody's saying septic tanks are maybe a big problem causing red tide. Are you on the fence with that one? You finding out different stuff?
No, I'm learning a lot more. We had our system here at the radio station inspected. They do an annual inspection. The county comes in. And they use a probe and everything else to make sure the leach fields are doing what they're supposed to be doing. If a septic tank is behaving properly and doing its job, there isn't anything coming out of the ground that's going to wash away and end up in the Gulf. I mean, the drain fields cause the water to go down. It doesn't go sideways, it goes down. And the gases and the nitrogen and the phosphates and whatever it may be, they're being leached and dissolved right there in the septic tank. So it's a natural process. It's an engineering process. It's why we have septic tanks. And
if you just dumped it in a hole in the ground, it doesn't do that.
Oh,
you
right.
actually have to have bacteria to eat the bad stuff.
Right, and I'm talking about septic tanks that are being operated properly. You know, if you're not taking care of your septic tank and your leach field and things like that, well, then maybe those tanks are causing a problem. But then it comes down to, are you a good citizen or not? Are you taking good care of your septic system? If you are, you're not having any impact on this red tide at all. That's my opinion.
Well, I'm going to go along with you because years and years ago, when I was a young man. I've always been, you know, in rural areas and all that. And believe it or not, it was not an issue with the septic tanks. As long as they were done properly and everything, they weren't considered a pollution problem. They were considered a fix for the pollution problem because, let's face it, me, you, and everybody else in my listening group, we use septic tanks or some part of it. Now, where we are finding the opposite problem, now, the reason we're bringing this up is not because we're, okay, yeah, we should have septic tanks. It's the city sewers. We're finding out that not all of the city sewage treatment areas are actually doing their job. They're dumping as much as 20% of what goes into the sewer system barging it into the Gulf and dumping it because they can't handle it. So it may be not us. Maybe those of us who keep, because I have Martin Septic, I will tell you right now, Martin Septic, local company, they come out, they check my septic tank all the time. I live on a canal, I'm very conscious of it. I've got a great relationship with Martin Septic. There's a lot of good septic people out there. You don't have to use them, you can use anybody. That's who I use. But it might be the cities. Now, RJ, what do you think? Do you think it could possibly be not us, but them, the them?
Well, this is the no-brainer part. If you're taking 20% of the total volume that's coming to you and you're just basically running it through a filter to get the particulate out, what do you think is going out into the bay? Mm-hmm. And that's the problem. And the solution that I heard from the city council in Venice, you know, really spun me around. Well, we've got to get everybody off of septic and onto the sewer. There was no discussion about a treatment plant that was built back in the 50s that's way, way over capacity. Maybe that's where they should be looking first, is let's get the systems fixed and let's get them up so they can handle increased capacity. Don't suddenly start sending it over the next 4 or 5 years, and again, the system's getting older and older. Let's not send them a whole bunch more stuff that they can throw out, because that 20% is an elastic number. Is it 100,000 gallons? If you add a whole bunch more people, is it 200,000 gallons? I mean, that's the game that's being played here, and I think we need to pay attention to this stuff.
Now, I know, and everybody who knows me well knows I'm a conspiracy nut. actually think the government's kind of out to get us. I mean, I have more hope nowadays than I have in past years, but, you know, this sounds less like a conspiracy theory and more like, well, if we can shift the blame to the homeowners and the individuals and cause the homeowner and individuals, because they can't fight back. They don't have 1,000 homeowners or 100,000 homeowners, but the governments have a accumulated thing. They've got the money for the press and all that. Maybe they're just trying to shift the blame to keep it off of them for a while. But the reason we're bringing this up is because everybody talks about the red tide, and everybody is certain this is what causes the red tide, and this is the problem, and that is the problem. I am not convinced on any of it. What I am convinced of is I want to find the actual truth. I don't care what social media says is the truth. I don't believe any of them. That's the reason we're bringing these things up. That's the reason you're being bored with them, is we are just looking for the truth. And what we talked about just now could be the truth. This is what we're trying to find out, where the real story lies. Going back to Snapper on the Flats and transitioning from snappers to snappers, are there any snapper fishing around up in the harbor, or how far out in the Gulf do you got to go?
Snapper fishing in the harbor has been actually really pretty impressive right now. You know, August and September in the Gulf is traditionally when your snapper get into the schools or their aggregates and actually spawn. So you've got some of those fish in here that are kind of the juveniles that haven't quite made it to maturity to go out there, but are like right at that borderline. And then the guys fishing on the flats that are looking for the snook and redfish, they think they're getting hit by pinfish, and then they're reeling up a 12 to 14 inch mangrove snapper.
Or 4 inch or 6 inch.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Bait yeah. stealer.
Yeah.
But, you know, they're doing fine with that. I mean, this time of year, you can catch some actually 2.5 pound snapper.
Right.
You know, all right, wait a minute. Morris just made a statement. Morris Campbell said you can find 2, 2.5 pound snapper.
You can.
You're going to have to be a little more specific, because that's intriguing.
Well, we're talking about on the flats, and I personally, more than a few times, probably for the last 10 or 15 years that I've fished on the East Wall and around Ponce de Leon area, those little mangrove sloughs and stuff in there, I have caught huge mangrove snappers in there this time of year.
Now, one of my favorite places is on the sandbar off Cape Hayes.
Yeah.
There's a couple of cuts in that sandbar. I'm not telling you where they are. I am telling you they are on the Cape Hayes sandbar. So if you got half a bit of an ambition, you can just idle out with your depth finder and figure out where it is. If you're not willing to do that much, I'm not willing to help any further. You know, there's got to be some fun in this. Mm-hmm. But I catch some, like you say, they're 2-pound snappers yeah. out there. A lot of fun, amazing on the end of a rod, and real good in my belly.
Oh, they taste really good. That's good dinner right there.
Yeah. And guys are catching a fair amount over on the West Wall and over in Turtle and Bull Bay. I'm assuming that the ICW is doing as good. I just haven't heard quite as many reports on that.
How far out in the Gulf right now? I'm going to throw this at you, Morris. You work off of Boca Grande Gasparilla mm-hmm. Island. How far out is there any red tide there, or how far out do you got to get away from it?
There was red tide about 10 miles out, 9-10 miles out, but it's pretty much dissipated now. And for the most part, you know, we're not having any issues with red tide. There are plenty of snapper, you know, from the pass right on out. You can catch them in the pass right now. Boca Grande trussels, the Gasparilla train trussels there around the fishing piers, the little Gasparilla pass where the rocks are, those are all premium spots for mangrove snappers.
So you don't even have to get in the Gulf?
No.
All right. Robert, how far would you go in the Gulf to get your really good snapper bite going?
Me personally, because of the couple of reports I've gotten in the last couple of days, I'm going to start at no closer than 10 miles out, because there's too many little patchy pieces of red tide in closer that can make it uncomfortable.
Right.
It's not getting down deep and killing those fish in that 20, 30 feet of water, but I want to go out there to that 10-mile mark just to make sure that I'm out of it, away from it, so I don't go through the headache of trying to figure out, get my anchor set up, get my chum slick going, just to find out that the red tide moved in on me.
Yeah, 60 to 75 feet.
Okay, so is there anything else out there besides the snapper, 60 feet out there?
A lot of cudas I'm hearing about, some permit I'm still hearing about, an occasional cobia. The weirdest part, though, is that I haven't heard much for Spanish or Bonita, so I don't know if that's
out probably in 80, 90 feet right now, because okay. there's pretty blue water out there right now. You get out, say, past 75, 80 feet, and the water just turns dark blue. The loop current's in at its closest point right now, so we're going to have blue water species available. So if you're out there...
Just hold your place a minute, Morris. You talked about the loop current. Is that the Gulf Stream, or what is this that you're talking about, and it moves?
The loop current makes the Gulf Stream. The loop current makes a big swing out of the Caribbean, and it swings up around Louisiana, Mississippi, right down our coast on the Panhandle, and right down the west coast of Florida, around the Keys at the Dry Tortugas, and it swings right up, and as soon as it does that, it is then called the Gulf Stream.
So in the Gulf of Mexico, it's called the loop current.
Mm-hmm.
As you hit the Straits of Florida and the Atlantic Ocean, it's called the Gulf Stream.
Gulf Stream.
That's what keeps England and France livable. Otherwise, they're literally like in the Arctic.
Absolutely.
They're too far north to actually have people living there year-round without the Gulf Stream.
Yeah.
Now, this current, as it comes down our coast, goes from north to south. But how close could it get to shore?
I've seen it in where it was pushing a really hard southerly current at 25 miles, 20 miles.
20 miles, 25
yes.
miles off the coast.
Yeah, and you got a 3-knot current.
So how far out would it actually be most commonly found?
Normally you're going to find it this time of year from 50 miles out.
So once you get out 50 miles, you're definitely in the loop current.
You should be.
And that's why you're going to find the sailfish, the mahi-mahi, mm-hmm. all the fish that you would think of off the Florida Keys, we have off the coast
and
here.
We usually have them first before they have them here, because all the fish that they get down there come from this area.
So everything you can find in the Keys, you can find here, but you literally got to go out 40 to 50 miles to find these fish. And it takes a bit of practice. You can't, that's why we say with people, it's very hard to go out and get a charter to find these fish, or even when you go out. It's like anything else, practice, time and experience, you know. And it's a little bit expensive to get this. This is an expensive college class, because the fuel it takes to get out there, get back, and all the gear and everything, but well worth it once you figure it out. Getting into snook season, and snook and redfish are both closed right now. Now, I've been on the phone with the state, like I was saying, talking about them, and I was asking, was I right, you know, about this, that, and the next thing. Before I spew off and tell you guys all these crazy theories of mine. I actually like to get a little bit of scientific background on them. And he says, for the most part, I'm dead on the money. I mean, throwing a little bit of variant. On the 26th of this month, they're going to decide whether to bring snook back and open it back up, and then they'll be deciding about redfish as well. Now, I call it a political closure because this is an election year. They didn't close snook the last time we had a bad red tide. 2005, it was much worse. We've had several things that did a lot more damage to the fish populations than this. This is closed because of the election year. He says, well, they did an emergency closure till they could count. I said, but who's doing the counting? And he assured me that the actual research guys are out counting right now. They're assessing the snook stocks, and the data will be available before the meeting. So, because I told him flat out, if this is what I think it is, political posturing, and that we lost, in my opinion, we lost about 5% of the snook population, as much as maybe 10. But we've had an amazing snook population. I mean, we're literally talking a few thousand fish. And we've had people come up and say they've counted 20,000 snook dead. And that would take, what would you think, Robert, 2-3 days to do that? How do you keep your place?
Well, if you found a fish every 5 seconds, you did the math, that's 28 hours of straight counting. And you can't do that in the dark, so you had to stop and come back. How did you find your spot? How did you figure out where the wind was blowing any of these and that you weren't recounting fish that you had already counted? It's a pretty... It's way more than an exaggerated fish story. How bold of a statement is that?
Aren't these the same numbers from a group that the same guys who said, oh, there's 100,000 dead snook out there?
Yes.
And then it was 50, and then it was 30. Now they're at 20, where according to the worst scientific data I've found, there's somewhere around 3,000 dead snook. That's the number that I hear that I take the most trust in anyway, and which is, I think, a pretty realistic number, 3,000 dead snook, and it's probably about 5% of our total snook. But the numbers are estimating 5 to 10% snook dead loss. You think it's a little higher, Robert?
Yeah, I think it's 10 to 15%, but I still don't think it's 40, 50, 60, 80% the way some of these people are claiming.
Well, I know it's not. I mean, I am personally positive. I've got money to bet on this. Okay, so
I think it's just a hair higher than yours, but not anywhere close to everybody else's.
And it's all good, because literally I'm guessing, you're guessing. I just feel my guess is better. That you feel your guess is better. And right now, anybody who's telling you how many percentages snook died, and they're saying this is the truth, they're full of BS. I mean, just literally bunker schnoddle. That's what I was referring to. And they're just as real as that. They have no credibility. They have no reasoning. They're no thought. Pretty much just social media people, and which means they have zero credibility.
What is your opinion on it, Morris?
Well, I've got a little different opinion than both of you guys on it. I don't think we lost that much of a percentage of our snook population, solely because it was isolated coastal, and we have a whole lot more snook than on coastal waters.
We have deep water snook.
Oh, we have snook in the Gulf. We have snook in the estuaries that never touched red tide. We have snook up the rivers that have never even thought about salinity. I venture to say that we have hundreds of thousands of snook that never were affected by this. I think we have an enormous snook population.
Current guesstimates are we catch and release 1 million snook a year on the west coast of
Florida. Yeah, we have an enormous population.
I mean, so if 3,000 to 5,000 died out of 1 million, I'm not sure what that percent is.
I'd venture to say that we lose that many fish every year to mishandling and catch release.
To catch and release, we probably lose, well, we know 5 to 7% of the snook caught and released are mortality fish.
Yeah.
So if you figure 5%, we lose 5% a year anyway.
Yeah.
So if we lost another 5%, 1 year does not a catastrophe make.
No.
And so, but I'm actually going to be good. I'm actually not going to call, you know, I no longer trust FWC. I used to believe in them 100%. I believe in some of the research people, but FWC seems to go in the way of the FBI and everybody else. All about political gain, and it's all about who's getting elected and whose buddy is this and buddy is that. We had two groups test for red tide at a place. We cannot find out where this place is, simply called the Punta Gorda Boat Ramp. And somewhere at this Punta Gorda Boat Ramp, a group went in and tested, and they say they found medium concentrations of red tide. Now, I looked on the water flow charts for the Peace River. At that day, it was almost a foot above flood stage. And I do not know of any red tide that exists in fresh water anywhere. And the water at the headwaters of the Peace River, because Punta Gorda is at the mouth of the Peace River. It is not actually on Charlotte Harbor. It is actually the mouth of the Peace River. Charlotte Harbor doesn't start till right at the end of Punta Gorda, off of Ponce de Leon. So being at the headwaters of a river that's flowing a foot above flood stage, over, you know, 12 feet high when it's supposed to be like 3 to 5. So all that fresh water, and they found a medium concentrations of red tide there. I'm going to call Bunker Schnottle again. Mm-hmm. And then they had a second group that showed up there, and for some reason or another tested another place called the Punta Gorda Boat Ramp. They won't tell us where this place is, and they found no red tide. All these things happened on the same day. One group tested it, found medium concentration. Another group tested it, found no red tide. And we know the river was flowing at flood stage, so it's impossible for there to be red tide there. So how do I trust the information coming out of FWC?
Oh, come on. You can trust them. Just like they say that the red snappers are endangered and the Goliath groupers and the manatees, there were only a few left in the world. Come on. You can trust them.
Yeah. We're beginning to find out groups that we thought we could trust the information from. I don't really know that we can. But who we can trust is the blind tarpon himself. So, that's Robert, right. Tell me about tarpon.
Tarpon fishing in the harbor has been a little tricky the last couple days, but there are fish just outside of Cape Hayes, between Cape Hayes and Boquilla, and up through the 20-foot holes as far as good-sized fish, you know, that 80 to 120-pound range. There's been a few in the past, and then I've been getting a few reports of them out there offshore about 10 to 12 miles hanging out on some of the reefs. The closest reef I've heard of so far was the Power Pole Reef, which is, what, 8.5?
8 miles, yeah.
Yeah, out of Boca. So there's plenty of fish around. The biggest, hardest part lately is guys have been seeing fewer ladyfish to find to use for bait. So they've mostly reverted to any type of swim bait, the DOA bait busters, the Storms swim baits have been the two most popular ones, and guys are experimenting with some other oddball stuff, but it's been working fairly well. You just got to get out there and put some time into it.
So tarpon fishing right now, if you want to get out, catch that big silver king, you still got time. It's all about that. But today we have got the big purple bass in the room, and we have Captain Morris Campbell, who is actually does guide freshwater fishing all around the state. And you've had some fun lately with your clients.
We've caught a whole bunch of fish. We've caught over 250 bass in the last 5 trips. And a lot of those have been 9 to 10 pounds, and a lot of...
He wasn't telling the truth, but he literally texted me. You cannot believe how many fish pictures I have on my phone right now.
Well, yeah.
I'm just kidding you, Morris.
These people from the FWC, I document
dig,
these.
Dig, my phone's lighting up. I'm going, oh my God, is this like, you know, an alert? And I mean, it's just fish after fish.
Right. Unlike the FWC, I like to document my catches and keep track of them. And the fellow I was fishing with, he actually counts every fish that we catch during the course of the day. So, yeah, when he tells you, well, do you realize we caught 23 bass over 7 pounds in the last 2 days? I knew we caught a bunch. And, you know, it's bass fishing 101. We're using big live shiners, and when we run out of those, and we're taking between 8 and 10 dozen each day, and we're using every one of those. and then we'll switch over and catch them on topwater, spinnerbaits, worms. You know, the bass are biting.
All right, what's the average size bass on this? Bash. What is the average size bass? If I say it southern, I can actually say bass. How big is the average bass on a stick marsh?
Well, average bass is going to be between 3 to 5 pounds. That's an average size.
Average size, 3 to 5 pounds. So if you were in New Jersey, your average size would make the newspaper.
Yes.
Trust me, I know fishing New Jersey. By the way, I love fishing in New Jersey. I don't care what the rest of you guys say. Awesome state, amazing fishery. Lake Copacon is literally one of my favorite places on the planet, as well as Seaside and all that. Point Pleasant, I guess. Mm-hmm. I think that's the name of it. Amazing places up there. But to go along with this, you're catching an average of 3 to 5 pounds, getting like 1 10 to
we're catching,
pound plus a day.
Yeah, in the last 5 days, we're catching very few 3 pounders.
But you're actually getting at least a couple every day over 10.
Yes.
So that's still pretty amazing.
And a lot of them that are 9, 13, 9, 15.
All right. These are fish people try their whole life to catch. Mm-hmm. All right. If you were going to pick a lure right now, an artificial, could be soft, hard, top, bottom, I don't pick anywhere out of your imagination. What lure is most likely to produce a 10-pounder right now outside of a live shiner?
I would use a top water, a large top water, and I would use it, you know, something in the same color that a shiner is, or a shad. There are some huge shad that are in the lakes that we're fishing. They're gizzard shads.
So now are you talking about like a full-size Zara Spook, Skitterwalk?
Full-size Zara Spook. I caught an 8-pounder on a Skitterwalk a few weeks back. But, you know, if you're wanting the 10-pound fish, I like using a big bait because the shiners we're using are a minimum of 8 to 9 inches long and 12 to 15 inches long.
Here's a crazy thought. What about some of those ones we use for amberjack, those monster offshore
Absolutely.
Poppers?
Absolutely. Enormous poppers, swim baits, those trout that you have in there, the savage trout, the swim baits. Yeah, absolutely.
All right.
The 10-inch, 10, 12-inch hoagies, too. They work really well.
Gotcha. Yeah, I mean...
And it's funny you should say something about New Jersey because one of my clients from New Jersey fished with me last year. He caught 43 bass in the marsh, and he got his personal best 9-pounder. And he texted me last night. He says, I hope you know that I do not bass fish in New Jersey anymore because of you.
Now, I'm going to say he's wrong. Because being a Lake Copacon first thing in the morning on a weekday, not a weekend.
No, don't go
on
a weekday.
You go out there and you start around Pebble Beach and just start pitching worms and stuff. It's awesome. Amazing fishery up there.
Yeah, but sometimes when you catch fish like that of that quality here, it kind of really kills it for the other areas you go to.
I guess it's because I don't live there. When I go there, I'm on vacation.
That's right.
And it's cool. It's neat. And I just like where I am and what I'm doing.
Because my cousins, you know, they both come down here, both females, and they love to fish. And they do almost no fishing at all back home because they just can't do it because of the fish.
They're down here catching sharks and tarpon and...
But
all
the fish they catch there,
it's really
just,
hard to go back
impressive.
To bluegills after shark and tarpon.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
You know, and they still love the outdoors. They still love to fish, but they just can't do it back there. They just get spoiled. So sometimes I can understand that.
Oh, mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
But anyway, so I'm trying to make up my mind. Am I going to go to Tallahassee? Because that's where the meeting is for this area. They're, for as far as closing snook and redfish, they're talking about closing snook or redfish, how long it's going to be closed, should they keep it closed, should they open it up. But they're going to do this up by Tallahassee. So this is a long drive, hotels, gas, all the rest of that stuff, and time. It's a lot of time and money. So I'm waiting to find out if I'm going to the meeting or not when I get a sneak peek at the numbers. Because the truth of the matter is, Southwest Florida right now is losing millions of dollars a day to the blue-green algae, the red tide, and the redfish snook closures. That redfish snook closure is probably costing Charlotte County $500,000 a day. Lost revenue, you know, even my buddy who owns an auto body shop, his numbers are way down. I mean, we're talking 50-plus% down because people aren't down looky-looing at all the sites on the sun and trying to find something and going, ooh, what's that? Crash, hit the car in front of them. They do a lot of these emergency repairs, getting people back on the road right away. It's down by more than half. According to a couple of real estate agents in, house sales are down by 40% over the last month. If you want to sell your house, it was be put your price up, and there would be a bidding war on it. Now you're going to have to drop $10,000 to $20,000 off the price of your house to get somebody to buy it. Now, I don't know if all these things are true. This is just what people coming into the store are telling me. But I know restaurants that are laying off people. I know businesses all over. It's not boding well. All this negative news has had a lot of impact. Now, I myself am we're losing thousands of dollars a day, no doubt about it. But I don't mind that if there is a problem with the snook numbers. But if this is social media and political reasons, I am going to go to Tallahassee and fight against this. If it's for the benefit of the fish, suck it up, buttercup. We're going to lose some money and let the fish get better. But if it's for political gain or social media science, where why everything on social media either has to be overly lovey or god-awful, hate everything, mm-hmm. you know, and if you they disagree with you, it's not that they disagree with you. You're just an evil person who should die and, you know, be burned at the stake. That's so, right. Anyway, but we're waiting to find out the numbers. I will let you know as we find out stuff, and if all of a sudden I'm not here to do the broadcast, I'm in Tallahassee, you know the numbers on the snook were good. If I'm here and not in Tallahassee, you'll know the numbers on the snook were bad. All right, Black Drum. Black Drum, still, is that still a thing right yet? Are we catching a lot of Black Drum?
Yeah, they're still doing actually really good.
I've actually been cleaning at the house and pressure cleaning, so I hadn't heard.
Yeah, no, they're still doing really well. The Punta Gorda Isle canals are doing really well. Port Charlotte canals have picked up a little bit more. The 41 bridge is still doing pretty well, but I've been getting a few more reports at El Jobin. And then also a couple gentlemen have been fishing down there in Turtle and Bull Bay and catching the small juveniles. You know, I mean, real small, like just that perfect eating size, mm-hmm. 15 to 20 inches. You know, a couple guys mistook them for sheep's head and had some pictures of them with them and said, oh, yeah, we caught some nice sheep's head today. And they had six black drum that were 17, 18 inches.
The Marine Patrol calls black drum bearded sheep head.
Yeah.
And because it's a lot of fun for them to walk up somebody in a boat or on the pier, and the guy he says, well, okay, what do you got? And they say, oh, I got a bunch of sheephead in there, and they got what would be legal sheephead, but inch too short black drum.
Or too many.
Yeah, they have a sheephead limit of black drum, and which is way too many, and they're too small.
Yeah.
If there's no teeth, no matter what you think it looks like, sheephead has teeth. Black drum has a beard or whiskers. The easiest way to tell the difference between the two. No teeth, it's not a sheephead.
That's right.
Now, Morris, are you into catching a black drum?
I like black drum. It's a hard-pulling fish, and for a lot of people, it's an easily accessible, huge fish to catch. Especially around the Punta Gorda Bridge and Lashley, the riprap around that up to the hotel. You can catch an enormous black drum.
Now, do you need special tackle or anything for these fish?
Just something that you can help, you know, keep them at bay with. You know, I wouldn't go out there with a Zebco 33, but, you know, a medium-sized spin tackle, you know, I think with some braid line or even mono would work fine.
Yeah, because I've literally caught 40 to 60 pounders on 10, 12-pound test mm-hmm. mono.
But that's us.
The funny part about it is, though, I've been out there fishing for bigger fish and had black drum snap 50-pound mono like it wasn't even there.
Yeah.
These are an individualistic fish. One, you catch a 60-pounder and literally you've got 10-pound test on and you fight him and you do land the fish. And then all of a sudden the next one goes, ha ha, ping, gone. So what's your favorite black drum? Excuse me. What's your favorite black drum bait?
I like a half a crab. I like a blue crab, and I like to cut it in half and fish the half crab on a nice, like a 3-aught to 4-aught heavy forged hook. I really like that. They take the crab readily. It's scent, especially if the water's dark and tannic like it is right now, and the drum's looking for that crab anyway. That's what they eat.
Robert, your best bet to crabs?
I'm going to agree with that. And all if right. I can't get crab, my second bait is always going to be a peeled shrimp.
Yes.
So those big shrimp that we bought, we got those great big shrimp tails in freezers, and if you put one of those on a big hook. Now, black drum actually have crushers in the back of their mouth.
Correct. Yeah, it's a crushing plate just for eating crustaceans, in particular crabs. They get that crab in the back of their throat, and they can actually apply enough pressure to literally shatter that shell like it's glass.
And that's why the heavy hook, not so much because they're going to pull heavy, and they do pull heavy, but the heavy hook, if they happen to swallow your hook or your jig head in there, they can literally crush the hook off of the jig head.
So they'll literally just bend it down.
Yes.
Yeah.
RJ, you a black drum guy?
No, I have not fished for black drum.
All right. For me personally, I find them an excellent fish. We are in the midst of another argument with some of the research guys, because we believe that the parasites in the black drum expel out of the fish somehow or another. And because if you catch them in November, December, January, February, there are very little, if any, parasites in them. But if you catch them this time of year and the water's hot, there's a tremendous amount of parasites with them. Right now, I would just catch and release them, because there's no sense taking one to eat, and then you're going to find a lot of parasites in them and end up throwing the fish away. No waste is what we're all about. If you want to keep a black drum to eat them, I highly recommend it, because I love the food. They're big, flaky fillets, and I mean really flaky. They even hold up to like steak marinade. You can actually marinate these big black drum fillets. But I don't do it till around January is when I'm looking to keep a bigger black drum. Small ones I'll keep whenever, but the big ones, you know, I hold out. But I just find them a fascinating fish that school up in the big massive schools, and they're in here in good numbers. I would say about 5 months out of the year.
Yeah, I would say that would be a pretty
accurate. They're here all year, but yeah, right. For 5 months out of the year, you've got really good shot at lots of black drum.
Well, yeah. Something that works amazing on these big schools, when these big fish are out schooling like they are right now, and you find them in the harbor, all you need to do, if you don't have bait and you just happen upon them, have a Johnson Sprite on your rod. Just tie one on and toss it in the middle of them and just jig it. They will knock the stew out of a spoon, gold or silver, it doesn't matter. They eat a spoon. And I recommend taking the little hook off if you're going to try a Sprite or a silver spoon or gold spoon of some other brand. But if you do, put a heavy forged hook on it single, and you'll have a lot of fun with them.
So it's just one of these amazing fish we find around Charlotte Harbor. Southwest Florida is an amazing place. But believe it or not, if you're on the east side of US 41, those are freshwater canals. The state law dictates that all bodies of water, excluding the Caloosahatchee, the Peace River, and Myakka River, out every other little creek, ditch, canal, whatever, when it comes across 41, there has to be a dam, a weir, a stop of some type to keep the salt water from going into the freshwater areas. So everything on the east side of US 41 is freshwater. Now, on the west side, most everything is salt water. People say, oh, it's brackish. Well, there is no brackish water in the eyes of the law. The law states either freshwater or salt water. Brackish comes in when you have rainwater runoff diluting the amount of salt in that area. And that would be brackish, a mixture of fresh and salt water. But according to the eyes of the law, it's all salt. But where that becomes important is you can have go out and you can fish on the east side of 41, find a pond, a canal, whatever, and catch. We've had some nice reports of blue cats that were brought in here. They weren't native to this area, but are actually being caught here in pretty good numbers right now. Freshwater catfish, which is an amazing delicacy. a lot of people love them. I've actually took Terry to Loretta Lynn's place up in Tennessee, and we ordered catfish because we're in Tennessee, you know, tradition, go to Loretta Lynn's place, right?
Right.
Did they serve it with the head on? I forgot to tell them that. Nah. So that meal didn't get eaten.
But yeah, that doesn't go over well with some people. That tends to give them a little bit of an unpleasant surprise.
And my Terry, she's tough. She's been with me a long time. She's pretty hardcore. But when that fish got on the plate with the head looking at it and everything, she was like, I'm not doing this. Nope. So we ended up going to a steak joint, paid our bill, went to a steak joint. But I ate part of mine because I actually liked the catfish. And they used to give these big white beans and sweet onions. And you mix the white beans, sweet onions while eating catfish. That is awesome. All right. So the blue cats, they're hitting them. I've been hearing quite a few blue cats being caught. People love them. Morris, what's the best way to catch these blue cats?
I would use a small bluegill or, you know, half of a bluegill.
Are we allowed to do that?
Yes.
Legally, yes. But you can't exceed your bag limit, and you cannot transport them from one body of water to another.
So as long as you catch them where you're going to fish with them.
Yep.
And you're not moving around. So,
correct.
All right, so you go out, you catch some little bluegills. And
yeah, and I mean hand-sized bluegill because right. Some of these catfish are actually good size. So I would actually fish a rod with a bluegill on it. You could probably catch a big catfish.
Now, are you
even
putting on a sinker or just let them freeline?
I would put a small sinker on because the bluegill will sink pretty easily, and you don't want to just pin them to the bottom. You know, you want them to go to the bottom and have a little wiggle left to them. You know, and if you're using a dead bait, still, you don't want to go too heavy with your sinker. You know, you want to just enough weight to get it down. You know, too heavy can be a bad thing.
Yeah, all just right. Holding it barely in place is really all you want it to do. You don't want it to be a complete 100% anchor. You'd like it to be able to swing a little bit with some of the different currents depending on the spot where you might be.
So now are you putting your sinker away from the bait, or are you using like a chicken rig? Or
you can usually take the sinker and just put it on your line, tie the hook to the line, put your bait on it, and cast it out, and just let it sit out there.
Okay. So basically like a knocker rig?
Yeah, a knocker rig. Some people will actually use a small barrel swivel and a piece of leader, you know, 12 inches, 18 inches long. I prefer the knocker rig before because you throw it out, it sinks to the bottom, your bait's there. If it's a live bait, he'll wiggle away, and you can let him wiggle away, and the sinker will stay put, and then you can just hold it there. When you get a bite, the catfish doesn't run up like a bass and just flare his mouth open and swallow the whole bait. The catfish will come up and he'll catch the bait and he'll swallow it while he's swimming off. So
right.
You know, it's important to let the catfish take the bait a little bit before you set the hook
on. So they're a real soft bite?
Sometimes they're not, but most times they are.
Yeah, okay. And they don't have that suction type feeding habit the way like a largemouth bass does. They actually have to grab a hold of it, and even on smaller baits, they still have to turn it just right to get it into their mouth because they do have a little bit of a small mouth. Now, here's one thing that's kind of interesting for a lot of people this time of year if they don't want to go out on the boats. The tilapia fishing right now has been off the chain. I mean, they are okay. Really in a
hold that
feeding
thought for
pattern.
Just a second. How many types of freshwater catfish do you think we have here in the general area around here? Can you name a few?
I can name four real quick. Would be a bull, the two varieties of bullhead. Mm-hmm. It's the brown and the yellow, which a lot of people call the yellows a butter cat.
Butter cat, yeah.
And then you've got the channel catfish, and then the blue cat.
And we have
and then the invasive
we have little
walking catfish.
Yeah, and walking catfish and the other one.
The hoblos and the plecos, which
okay.
are
yeah.
not,
but
not
actually, for actual good edibility, we have four different species of freshwater catfish. And a lot of people forget how good of eating that is. Mm-hmm. And, you know, to be a little blunt, you know, you get yourself a board and nail and nail the head down to the board and just peel them down, and they're super easy to skin and clean.
Some of the most exciting strikes and fights that I've had freshwater fishing in our rivers, Myakka and Peace River, for bass with shiners. The shiner will get taken, and we'll set the hook, and, you know, it's like you got an enormous snook or something on, and it's a 25, 30-pound catfish.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Oh, it's an epic battle.
It's epic.
Not worth a darn to eat at that size, I don't think, but...
All right. This week's best bet. Robert, if somebody's just going to go out to have some fun fishing, where should they go? What should they get?
Honestly, I'd go tilapia fishing.
Okay, you were getting into that. Where would you go tilapia fishing?
I'd go right up the street here to that Deer Prairie Creek Park, or up by Sleeping Turtle Preserve right up there on the Myakka River, or Myakka State Park itself, because I've had a lot of customers in this week fishing all these areas, and they're buying wigglers and night crawlers and catching 15, 20 fish in the 2 to 3, some even 4-pound tilapia, along with a few Mayan cichlids. I mean, it's been a... Usually we don't have those good reports of tilapia because it's usually incidental bycatch with worms. These guys are actually targeting them and catching them regularly.
Absolutely.
Right now.
All right, Morris, if you're going to go out, it can be freshwater, saltwater, whatever you like. If somebody's going to go out fishing, what should they get and where should they go?
If I'm going to go saltwater fishing, I'm going to go out in the Gulf and I'm going to do the snapper. I'm going to chum a little bit, and I'll go out there between 60 and 75, 80 feet. Find a ledge, wreck, or piece of hard bottom, set up on it with an anchor, and catch them with some live shrimp and cut baits. If I'm going freshwater, I'm going bass. It's hard to argue with over 240 bass.
So the stick marsh it is.
Yeah, okay. The bass bite is on.
Hey, RJ, any ideas for folks out there? Where to go, what to do?
Just a couple of days ago, I have a friend got a house off of Biscayne, the northern part of Biscayne, and he's got a ditch that runs behind. Huge amount of water going through there. And we've been pulling bass out of there. We had a little barbecue on Sunday, and we pulled 3 or 4 bass out of there, 3, 4, or 5 pounds in that range. And you would not expect those fish to be in that narrow, dark water. And we did it with a couple of purple rubber worms and just throw them in the water and let them go with the current, and all of a sudden you got a bass on. So you guys are right. They are biting, and they're hitting everything right now.
So the good news is there's a lot of fishing, a lot of fish. We have no blue-green algae in Charlotte County.
No.
And we have little to no red tide in Charlotte County. We do have some outside, but Charlotte County is amazing. Bits of Sarasota County are amazing. Some ain't so much, but I'm from Charlotte, so, you know, you got to say that. Anyway, Fish and Frank here. We want to appreciate you guys listening up. Fish and Frank in the chair. Robert the Blind Tarpon in the chair across from me. Captain Morris Campbell, if you need a freshwater guide, you can give Morris a call. He goes all over the state. Morris Campbell. You can reach him through Fish and Frank's. And RJ, our leader and commander in charge of chaos in general. And this is Radio Fishing. We'll see you guys. Bye. I'm gonna fish, 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 fish. I'm going fishing, hook, sinker, and line. I said,
okay, we're clear.
Okay.